I'm joined by Marima and Karen, as always. Hey, guys.
Hi.
How's it going with everybody?
Not bad.
Excellent.
Oh, excellent. Wow. You definitely got up on the right side of the bed today. An excellent day, Marima. Are you sure?
Well, it's only had about an hour in it so far.
Oh, okay.
So
all right.
It's going well.
All right. Makes more sense because I was like, wait a minute. That's a little overenthusiastic. Anyway. So let's kick it off, I guess, with what we've been reading. Karen, do you want to go ahead and fill us in on what you've been reading for the last week?
Sure. I finished Charisma by Jean Ryan, so I won't go into major detail about that. But I liked it, and I think that there's going to be a lot of really deep sort of topics to talk about when we do a review episode on that, and I'll be interested to hear what you think. And then I also read Remnants, Season of Fire by Lisa T. Berggren. And that one is the second book in her Remnant series, and I'm pretty sure I talked about the first one before, which was Season of Wonder. And this one was good as well. It's a really deep, sort of detailed world, which sometimes I get lost in, but this one I think is really interesting because it's sort of futuristic, but it's that whole, they sort of went back to medieval times type of thing. But in this case, she kind of does explain it, or you get a sense of, why that happened. So that, I think, makes it, kind of stand out from a lot of the other ones that we've read like that recently. And it's got a lot of religious undertones, which is really different from a lot of the other stuff that I've been reading recently. So it's very different, but I definitely enjoy the series.
Cool. One of the things I read this past week was Inherit Midnight by Kate K. Myers. This came out in late February, I think. And it's really cool. It's kind of like the Westing game where you kind of, it's like this massive scavenger hunt. But what it is this family who are, of course, very wealthy. And the grandmother decides that she doesn't like the route that her grandchildren are taking, and her children, for that fact. They're kind of all spoiled. They don't really respect the fact that with, having money, you still have to be responsible. You can't just wait around for things to come to you. So she tries to teach them a lesson. And in order to do that, she sets up this massive scavenger hunt. And who can ever can complete all of the elements will inherit the company and everything else. And the main character is Avery. And Avery's kind of the scandal of the family because her father had an affair with the nanny and there was Avery. But Avery was also raised by her grandmother. She's been raised by her grandmother because her mother passed away and her father is an alcoholic. There's a lot of family issues going on in the book. And so everything is told from Avery's point of view. And the family is set up so that there are some really horrid people in this family. They're terrible people. And as Avery's competing in the competition, she starts getting death threats and different things start to happen. So it's this really cool kind of adventure that you go on, and they go to all these different places. And the one of the big things for the grandmother is that it's always about the family history and where they came from. So a lot of it has to do with that, and it kind of follows through the book, and it's really cool. And I liked it a lot. So it's definitely something I would say pick up and read. It's a super quick read because it's kind of suspenseful and you kind of keep going and before you know it, you're done. So I really liked it. And Marima, how about you?
Well, I reread Insurgent by Veronica Roth because I saw that last week. Just to I wanted to do a bit of a comparison thing in my head because I had heard people say it was very different, and whoa, it was so different.
I've been hearing it a lot.
Okay, yeah. So I guess real quick, Insurgent has basically nothing to do with the book. The film is I think I said it's an adaptation of overhearing someone describe the Wikipedia page, and it's they've adapted that. It's pretty bad, and it is, it's fairly unrelated to the book. And I have a feeling that's because they're going to want to change things for Allegiant, and they're trying to set that up now.
Are they going to change the ending, do you think?
I think they want to. I would be pretty mad if they do.
No. Dear Lionsgate/Summit, You have managed to successfully put through two YA novels as movies, made a ton of money, and made them super successful series because you stuck to the source material. What part of don't change it is confusing? It's been successful. It's worked. Why would they change it? I know why they would change it, but...
Yeah. Yeah, I think the problem is that the end of Insurgent basically makes all of Allegiant impossible. So I'm not quite sure how they're going to go about that. Yeah, we shall see. But anyway, I reread that and I was like, oh, I kind of enjoyed it more this time reading it through, maybe because I had a fuller picture of the whole story in my head. And then I also read The Guy, the Girl, the Artist and His Ex by Gabrielle Williams, who's an Australian author who I've talked about before. That's out at the end of March, and that was really, really good. So quick background, in the 1980s in Australia, this group stole a Picasso painting from our gallery, and the crime was never solved. And the painting was found and with an anonymous tip and all of this. And it's just like this weird thing that happened in Australia, like this multi-million-dollar painting was stolen. Then it was returned unharmed and it was stolen by this group who called themselves the Australian Cultural Terrorists. And it was just this weird ass thing. So this book is like a behind the scenes of that. And it's kind of explaining, you know, her fictionalized version of how she thinks that happened based on these four characters. And it's really, really good. I have talked about her books before because they're just weird and cool and like bizarre and really well written and very fun. So definitely recommend that. And then I also read, I keep wanting to call this Magnolia, but that's not the title.
No. Nope.
Magonia or Magonia.
I think it's
I'm
going to
say Magonia. Yeah. By Maria Devana Headley. And this is, you know, a new sci-fi, probably going to be a trilogy thing. But I actually really liked it, although they're calling it a mashup of Stardust and The Fault in Our Stars, which I don't really see. But basically it's about this girl who like has all these health problems and she like hallucinates that she sees these ships in the sky and stuff. And then it turns out the reason that she has all these health problems is because she's an alien and she can't live on Earth properly, which I thought like that's a really cool premise. And she gets like kidnapped by one of these ships in the sky. And basically there's like this other group of people and they kind of scavenge from Earth, like they scavenge food and things from Earth, and it's weird. It's so weird, guys. Like I don't know, there are like owls that talk to you and people have birds that live inside their chests and it's just so weird. Yeah, like the first thing that happens to her is this bird flies into her mouth and then it lives in her lung. And then she has this little door in her chest that she can open up and like have this bird inside or not. So weird. But it's actually very well written and the premise is really good. The lead female character is really, really, really excellent. And it kind of didn't go down this path that I thought it was going to go in terms of the romantic aspect that I will not spoil. But it's weird but cool. And as with like the book you were talking about, Kerr, it kind of explains a lot of why things are the way that they are and kind of links it back to history on Earth and, you know, people describing these weird like weather patterns and seeing these weird like aberrations and stuff. So, yeah, it was cool. I actually really liked it. I, you know, would have liked it more if it wasn't going to be a series. But for a standalone, it kind of works as well. And that one is out in April, I believe.
Yeah, April. I have the ARCs thing right next to me. That's why I'm like, oh, no, it says April.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was good. But, yeah, that's all. Those three.
Fun. All right. Okay, so let's move on to some book bites. We've been talking a lot about the recent adaptations of fairy tales, the animated or, you know, from Brothers Grimm and making them into live action movies. And the latest one to be adapted is going to be Beauty and the Beast. And they've just had a bunch of casting for it, which I think is really cool. So in case you guys didn't know, Belle will be played by Emma Watson, which is kind of cool. And then the Beast will be played by, I'm going to forget his name. He played Matthew Crawley.
Dan Stevens.
Thank you. I'm like, Steven? Yes, Dan Stevens. He will play the Beast, which I'm not 100% sure about that yet. I guess we'll see.
I don't like it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Everyone seems like really excited, but he's really old. That's what I don't like.
Yeah, there definitely will be an age discrepancy between the Beast and Belle.
Yeah, it's 8 years. I just looked it up.
Mm-hmm.
Too much.
Yeah. Well, moving on from there, they cast Gaston, and that will be Luke Evans, which I think is kind of funny because he always seems so serious in the movies that he does, and Gaston is kind of like this big caricature. So I think that'll be interesting. But I think the best one ever is that Josh Gad will play LeFou, who is Gaston's sidekick, his like idiotic sidekick. So I'm really excited to see Josh Gad do that because I think he'll be hysterical. And that's it. No one else has been cast yet. Or they've been cast and it hasn't been announced yet, I should say. So we don't know who Mrs. Potts will be or Lumiere or Cogsworth or any of those guys who are kind of really important. They kind of round out the entire, you know, important bits of the cast. So what do you guys think so far about the whole idea of Beauty and the Beast being live action? And it will be musical as well.
I just thought of Julie Walters should play Mrs. Potts. I just thought of that. That would be great.
That would be really cool. I would love that. Yeah, I like that idea a lot, actually.
Yeah, I mean, can any of these people sing?
Yeah, actually, when we announced the casting for various people, there are actual snippets of them singing. So there's a snippet of Luke Evans singing. There's a snippet of Emma Watson singing. Josh Gad can sing because he just did Olaf.
Josh Gad is fine. Josh Gad right. is like a Broadway singer. That's no yeah. problem. But none of the others, like, okay, I guess let me revise this way. Can they sing well? Because lots of actors are like, I can sing. Like, I can do musical parts. And it's like, but maybe you shouldn't. You know, right. maybe you don't. Not that Beauty and the Beast is like a very difficult score, but it just frustrates me endlessly to have people be like, oh, but that doesn't matter. It's like, but it's a musical. Like, it matters a little bit. Yeah.
Well, I think Mrs. Potts is going to be the big one because she has the biggest song, if you will, throughout the whole thing, if you think about it. So I think whoever plays Mrs. Potts is going to definitely have to...
I mean, Belle is a pretty big has
right,
a few
but
songs.
Emma Watson can supposedly can sing, so and there's I don't know. Okay. I don't know, there's video of her singing is all I'm saying. I'm not saying yes or no. I didn't actually watch the video.
She did some like backing singing for someone and right. it was like nice and stuff, but that's a very different thing to anyway, that's my only question. Otherwise I'm sure the casting I'm a big fan of Luke Evans's face, so I'm happy to look at him.
And, you know, he should be pretty beefed up if he's going to play Gaston, so.
Yeah.
It'll be
yeah.
lovely.
That's all right.
All right. Well, listeners, you tell us what you think about the casting of Beauty and the Beast so far. I'll be curious to see what everyone says. All right. So let's move on to some interesting topics for this episode. It's going to be kind of a news episode mixed in with some, like, new book news. But this first topic popped up all over Twitter and Facebook early in the week, and it's about Andrew Smith. If you guys don't know who Andrew Smith is, he wrote Grasshopper Jungle and the new book, The Alex Crow. And he's basically been called out for sexism. He did an interview with someone, I think it was Vice, and it talked about, he made a comment about women and how he doesn't understand women when he was asked about having women and girls in his novels. So the question that was asked was, on the flip side, it sometimes seems that there isn't much of a way into your books for female readers. Where are all the women in your work? And then he answered, I was raised in a family with 4 boys, and I absolutely did not know anything about girls at all. I have a daughter now. She's 17. When she was born, that was the first girl I ever had in my life. I consider myself completely ignorant to all things women and female. I'm trying to be better, though. So that's what he said. And then from there, came kind of like this absolute blitz, saying that he was sexist, that he, you know, basically that he was sexist, and it just went on and on and on. And there was a lot of name calling and a lot of things said about him. Now, while I don't think what he said was the smartest way to phrase it and maybe didn't come across as the way he wanted it to, I don't necessarily see it as being sexist. I wouldn't take total offense to that. I would think that maybe he was a little ignorant and maybe he needed to work on expanding his worldview a little bit more. But I don't know. How do you guys feel about it?
I mean, I would rather somebody say, I don't understand, you know, whatever topic, whether it's females or something else, than try to come off as being somebody who knows a lot about that and it being just really fake and inaccurate. So I think what he said was honest and truthful, and there's, you know, he should be praised for that, I guess. But at the same time, I absolutely agree that he probably could have said it in a much better way. I have a hard time believing that he's so inept at understanding women that he just cannot include them in his books or anything like that. But the biggest thing here came in one of the other articles, which I'll be linking to all of them in the show notes, is the last line in this one article says, it cheapens the whole movement it hide behinds in regards to the one person that really called him out on this. And I think that's something huge that needs to be recognized, because it, you know, you can complain about this all you want, but the thing is, he didn't say it intentionally. And I think that there are much bigger battles that need to be fought than, you know, this one.
Okay, I need to say things now. What he said was 100% sexist. And the idea that women are different than men somehow, or like need to be written differently to men, is the reason this is a problem, is because that idea is something that has like pervaded history. Especially if you're talking about sci-fi fantasy, like this idea that men, especially male writers who have dominated the genre, that they can write about, you know, spaceships and aliens and giant grasshoppers, but they can't write about women. Like, that is a thing that has consistently happened through like decades and decades and like centuries of writing. So that's why people are annoyed by this. And that's why it is sexist to say. That said, I'm not calling Andrew Smith a sexist. Like, you can say that a comment is sexist without saying the person is sexist. And I would agree with Karen that, sure, like, is this at the top of my priority list? No, but it is like just this continued problem that women face in literature, and especially in sci-fi fantasy, where like they're considered to be somehow inherently different to men, which is like a cornerstone thing of sexism. Do I think it got a bit out of hand? Like, sure, but at the same time, I was kind of following this a little bit when it happened, and I actually didn't see anyone. Like, there are all these claims of, oh, he was bullied, and he was like, people scared him off Twitter and scared him off Facebook and all of this because he, you know, left social media straight after. I didn't actually see anyone like do any of that. I'm not saying that didn't happen, but I certainly didn't see it, and I did have a bit of a look for it. So, you know, then there's this issue of like, well, if women say, or if people say, hey, like, I found that quite sexist, that comment, suddenly the conversation became about like protecting Andrew Smith's feelings, which is very problematic because he's actually not the victim in terms of like that. And, you know, if people are, obviously, if people are like bullying, or if people are, you know, being aggressive or whatever, that's not okay ever. Doesn't matter what you're talking about. So, you know, forget those people for a second. But like the people who were genuinely saying like, look, I found this quite sexist, and for this reason, I totally understand that. I've only read Grasshopper Jungle, but yeah, there are not a lot of women in it. I still love Grasshopper Jungle. Like, I thought it was a great book, but I don't know. I saw a lot more people being like, why are we having a go at Andrew Smith? Like, you know, you don't understand his books, or, you know, all of this stuff, rather than people saying Andrew Smith's, you know, the worst person on the world. So, you know, obviously, like, my judgment is clouded by that, because I definitely saw a lot more people like having a go at the women who were pointing out this issue. I really liked that one that you linked to the list. That
It's by Chuck Wendig.
Yeah,
that was a really good one.
I think that's good. Like, that's quite balanced. Yeah, you know, maybe everyone should read that. I think, yeah, it definitely got blown out of proportion. That said, like, he does say something in here which I think is important to note, which is, like, if a man says something that people disagree with, you know, he might get some bad feedback on social media. And if a woman says something, like, she might get death threats. So perspective is helpful in situations like this. But yeah, I would 100% call what he said, it's ignorant and it's sexist. Like, even if he recognizes that, it doesn't make it less so. Even if he's a good writer, it doesn't make it less so. If he's a nice guy, it doesn't make it less so. It's obviously great that he's recognizing that, because he's saying, like, you know, I'm trying to do something to rectify this. But at the same time, like, his premise is inherently sexist, because he's saying, I need to learn how to write women. And that's a problem if he feels like women are somehow alien or, you know, other to men.
Okay, well, I have a question, just to play devil's just to play devil's advocate. What if he writes women and he gets it so wrong, and then people freak out on him then? So how can he win in this situation? How does this make it a situation that he can rectify if it could go badly if he writes women and it's not a perception that people like?
Well, there's no, you can't write
but that's
the way that you write the point. Way that you write women wrong is you write them as, like, you know, like less human. Like, there was this great, I saw this great tweet from Samantha Shannon, who wrote the the Bone Season. And she said, tip for writing women, imagine you're writing about a human being, right? Congratulations, you've written about a woman. And it's like, that's basically sums it up. And, you know, sure, maybe people might be like, oh, that's so mean, that, like, that's so snarky. But that's kind of the point. Like, I sort of am less concerned with, I'm so much less concerned with men being like, oh, like, it's hard for me to write about women, versus, like, women being like, wow, I don't see myself represented in fiction, or, like, you know, the representations of me are what, like, you know, why is an alien or some sci-fi element or whatever more complex, or, you know, offer more to a reader than, like, the depiction of a female character? That's what people are saying. So yeah, I don't know, I think it's been, like, very blown out of proportion. But I think I will reiterate, like, you can say that a comment is sexist or racist or, like, homophobic or whatever in terms of it being, like, ignorant, without calling that person, like, a sexist or a racist or a homophobe or, you know, any of those things. And He was very honest. Like, it was a really honest quote. And I think that bit at the end where he says, like, I'm trying to improve, or I'm trying to get better about it, or whatever, is kind of has been dropped off a lot of people's, like, retweeting of it. But, you know, I don't have any problem with people saying, like, hey, I found that sexist. And if most of the people who are saying it are women, like, that's probably means something, you know? So that's it. That's how I feel.
Karen, any other thoughts?
No, I mean, I do agree with all of that. And I think it's just, like you said, Marima, it got blown out of proportion. And I think people just need to come back and focus on really big topics. I mean, not to say that the little battles aren't important, but there are so many other issues, you know, bigger picture issues going on here, that to fight these little battles might be good, you know, one day, but there are a lot of other problems too.
Right. Actually, one other thing I wanted to mention is I saw this hashtag come out of this, which was Keep YA Kind. I don't know if you guys saw that. That some people who are, like, saying, you leave Andrew Smith alone, it was in their thing. And, like, that annoyed me more than anything else. Like, that was the worst bit of this, because I don't know what that means, but to me, that means like keep YA like sanitized, like don't discuss things like this because we don't want to talk about them. And I was like, like that made me very mad.
That is a obviously very odd hashtag.
Yeah, like be, you know, be courteous in your discussions and things like that. But, you know, as I said, like if you feel frustrated by something or whatever, you are perfectly entitled to point that out. And as long as you don't do it in like a, you know, super right. offensive, like rude, aggressive manner, because that's not okay.
Yeah, and maybe that's what that has to do with more than anything, because I think oftentimes there have been many a heated debate or argument in YA and things aren't kind. They become very quick to be nasty and mean and cruel. So maybe that's...
Well, yeah, know. But again, like, just anecdotally, I did not see that on the sexist side, only on the other side. So,
right,
It did, yeah, if it did, I'm sure there was at least one person. Like, if people were sending him hate messages and stuff, obviously, right. That's not okay. I'm just saying, like, I didn't see any of that. So I was kind of like, I'm curious why this conversation immediately turned to a question of bullying a male author versus, like, understanding the problems of female readers. Weird. So weird that, like, the man becomes the center of the conversation. That's so weird, guys. It's like, I don't know. It's like men and women are treated differently. That's crazy.
All right, enough of your sarcasm for today, dear. All right, so let's move on and talk about Harper Lee. A couple weeks ago, a month ago now, maybe, we learned that Harper Lee's second novel, Ghost at a Watchman, was signed over to the publishing house and that it would be published. Although there was a lot of question and speculation around whether or not Harper Lee actually agreed to it or how that kind of worked out, because Harper Lee has been unwell for quite some time, and it was questionable on whether or not she was coerced into signing over the rights to her second book. And we kind of talked about it at length and how we felt about it. Now, currently, the state of Alabama is looking into whether or not Harper Lee is competent and capable of signing over her novel, which I think is really interesting. So somebody filed a complaint with the state of Alabama. They now are required to look into it. So, what do you guys think about that? That's kind of intense that it went that far.
I think that's great. I'm glad that they did.
Me too.
They definitely should have, because this was really sus.
So, basically what Alabama is doing is they're looking into... There's two different places that are going into look at her. There's a Human Resources, and then there's a... another one that I can't find the name of at the moment. And they're basically checking on her well-being, making sure that she basically hasn't been bullied into signing over her consent to the novel and that the publication is willful. Oh, and it's the Alabama Securities Commission. They're also investigating an inquiry for the Human Resources Agency about this. So I don't know, it's so intense that it had to come to this. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just so weird.
I feel like this was the necessary step that needed to be taken, because whether or not she was pressured into it, like the interviews that the publishers gave around the time were not very encouraging in terms of making us feel like, oh, she's jumping for joy about this. So, you know, I think that's good. Like, they alerted them to it. They have to look into it, which is really good. And, like, if there's no problem, then the book will be published, no problem. And if there is a problem, then, you know, it won't be. So it's kind of like a win-win just to do that double checking.
Exactly. There is a very lengthy statement that was released by the publisher. And it's kind of interesting. So, and the initial part of the statement says, I was surprised to hear that someone had anonymously approached the authorities in Alabama to suggest that Harper Lee was being subjected to elder abuse. Having spent quality time with her over the last couple of years, I can categorically state that she is in full possession of her mental faculties. We have had wonderful discussions ranging over many subjects, from the state of contemporary politics to the university life in England. She spent time in an undergraduate at Oxford about literature. Now, my question is, in the beginning, didn't the publishing house say they hadn't spoken to her in ages? That all the work was done through the lawyer?
Yeah, I think so.
So to have this person come out and say that they've been speaking over the years is kind of interesting. Because from what I recall, yeah. And then the statement goes on to say she was surprised when the manuscript, which she had presumed long lost, was found last August, and she is both delighted and enthused that it will now be published. Contrary to certain press reports, it was not rejected at the time. Her putative editor, having read Ghost at a Watchman, persuaded her to write Scout's story through the eyes of a child, and the plan was to write a short novel to act as the bridge to Ghost at a Watchman. So, I don't know. They're saying that she was excited when it was found and that she's delighted it would be published, but
I think the publishers need to work on whoever's in charge of their PR, because like every time they make a statement, people are like, wait, what now? Like, what's happened?
Yeah, it seems
that's part of the problem, just like a lot of miscommunication.
Yeah, it doesn't, I don't know, it doesn't make a ton of sense per se, but yeah. So that's where that stands, and I guess we'll find out more as the state of Alabama continues their investigation and whether or not they feel that she was competent enough to make the decision to send over her novel. So it could be quite a long time before anyone gets to read Ghost at a Watchman. We'll see. All right, moving on in some more news. This past week, author Terry Pratchett passed away. He was author for books such as Discworld and stuff like that. Did you guys ever read any Terry Pratchett?
Yeah, so Discworld is a series.
Right.
With like 40 books in it or something.
It's massive.
And yeah, I love Terry Pratchett. He's like one of the best fantasy authors like of all time. I don't think many people would argue with that. His books are so like, if people have not read Terry Pratchett, you should read some Terry Pratchett, because his books are so clever, so funny. A lot of them are like very satirical about, you know, society and et cetera. And it's just, Discworld can be a bit intimidating, I know. So maybe like Good Omens is one of my favorite books ever, and he co-wrote that with Neil Gaiman, so that could be a good place to start. The Carpet People was his very first book, and that's, I love that one so much. And the Discworld books, you don't actually have to read the whole series, like they kind of exist in little branches like that follow certain themes, so you know, you can, if you go online and like Google it, you'll be able to find, I'm sure, a Discworld reading order or something, and it will tell you like where you can start. But I really like all of the books that has death as a character in them, which were all of the books that people were quoting when he died, and what he wrote on his Twitter and stuff. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. But no, it's just really sad because he was like not that old, and he's been battling Alzheimer's.
Right.
And,
he had a very rare form of Alzheimer's that basically, even more so, like destroyed his memory and I know Alzheimer's does that, but it was something specific about it. I was trying to look for the details, but I can't find it. So yeah, it was really sad to see that he had passed away.
Yeah.
Very sad. But talking about Discworld, the very first book in Discworld, I'm reading this from his obituary on Publishers Weekly. It says the first of his Discworld books is set in what is described as a flat world that rests on the shoulders of four massive elephants who are atop a giant tortoise that travel through space. I feel like that's all that needs to be said about that.
I mean, Terry Pratchett has written like some of the weirdest books ever written, but they're so good. They're like, okay, I don't want people to be dissuaded by the like perceived weirdness of his books. Like there's a lot more going on than that. But yeah, they're also super weird. In a great way.
I like it. I like it a lot. All right. Karen, did you ever read any Terry Pratchett?
I did not. Does that surprise you guys?
Not really, no.
Not at
all. Just a second. Just thought I'd give you the chance to pitch in. Yes, dear.
But no, I was reading a lot of the articles that were going up on the site, and like Selena put together a whole bunch of quotes from his books, and it was really nice, and it sounded like things that I would definitely be interested in. And I saw somebody tweeted a picture. I almost want to say it was like Hank Green or something. He went to his local bookstore and the like Terry Pratchett section was wiped clean. Like everybody's just going out and buying his books now. And I guess, you know, it's sad, but in a lot of ways that's kind of nice too.
Yeah, everyone should go and read a Terry Pratchett book now. Because everyone saw, like you said, all of those quotes and things, and everyone's like, oh, like, these look really good, you know, but then read the book. There's even more quotes. There's, like, a whole book of those quotes if you read the books. I'm going to, like, do some Terry Pratchett rereading when I have time because I haven't read him for a while, and I love him.
Excellent, excellent. All right. Let's get on to this next one, because we all know this is my favorite. The movie poster for Paper Towns was released this past week, and did they borrow the color, the same color from the Fault in Our Stars poster? Like, they recycled it? I don't know. So what do you guys think about it? This is the latest John Green book turned movie.
I hate it.
Excellent.
I really, really hate it.
And, why? Go for it, Karen. Go.
It's just, it reminds me of the Get Smart poster, like the movie with Anne Hathaway.
Oh.
Because like the hairs over their faces and stuff, and it just I have not read this book yet. It's on my list. I'm like 3 or 4 books away from reading it, so I can't attest to like if this captures the I don't know voice or the tone of the book or anything, but just as a general poster, I just think it's really dumb and it really bugs me, and I just want to like move her hair away from her face.
Get lost, get found is a really bad slogan as well.
Yeah,
like that's such a bad tag.
I don't know what that's about. That's really weird. But for all of you who are wondering, John Green will be debuting the Paper Towns trailer live on air on the Today Show on Thursday, March 19th. Set your clocks, people. So yeah, but like, I don't know, like I look at it and I'm like, well, I get that they're going for the straightforward thing, but like the blue in the back just reminds me so much of the Fault in Our Stars. I'm like, we couldn't get him a new color. Paper Towns couldn't have its own color. Like it had to have the same blue. Like, are we going for consistency here? What's the deal? I don't know.
I don't think it's a very good poster.
No,
like
I really don't.
I don't think it has much. Well, I don't know. Like, okay, Paper Towns, not my favorite book, but I don't think it just looks like a really typical like teen movie poster. I think that's what it looks like.
Yeah.
So I'm not really getting anything from it. Like, it's not very exciting. Is it, what were you saying? Like, is it representative of the book? I don't know. Like, she's in front and he's like creepily chasing her from behind. So in that sense, like, yeah, it is pretty.
That part
it
works.
It is pretty representative of the book. I don't know. It just seems kind of boring to me.
Yeah, it kind of is. Even the font for Paper Towns is kind of like, oh, hey, it looks like random block letters.
Is that from one of the books? Like, was that used with the book cover?
I don't think
like,
so.
The way the Fault in Our Stars was? I can't remember.
I don't think so. I'm going to look right now, though, just so we can be accurate before I get hate mail being like, what are you? No, it's not. No, because the cover is the one with the map and the pin, which is what I thought. I'm not crazy. And it's a very basic paper. Like, the font is very basic. So, yeah. So that's all new just for the poster. I don't know. Maybe we'll get something more exciting later. We'll see. All right. So, do you guys, Karen, do you still have time or do you want me to wrap it up now? Because we're at the, like, a little over 40 minutes. We're fine.
We can go through the thingies.
We can?
Yeah.
Okay. There's only 3 of them, so. All right. So, finally, to round out this lovely news episode, we're going to talk about a few new book deals that have come up. For those of you who read adult novels, Luann Rice has written a ton of adult novels, and she's now got her YA debut, and it's called The Secret Language of Sisters, and it was sold to Scholastic. And it's in the novel, a girl enters a coma-like state known as the locked-in syndrome. It's a condition where the victim is conscious but cannot move or speak. After getting into a car accident, the accident was caused by the fact that she was texting with her sister while driving. The locked-in state allows the victim to be aware of her surroundings as well as the story of her sister, who blames herself before the accident. They were pitching this as If I Stay and I forget what else, or something else, like a combination of the two. So what do you guys think about that? Do you feel it, or you're like, nah?
Kind of reminds me of another book that, did we do it on Book Hype?
What was it?
Where the girl like gets in the car crash and then all the people around her like react to that, and it's like, was it suicide or was it an accident?
Oh, no, we talked about it, though.
Oh, yeah, but it kind of reminds me of that, because, like, she's in this kind of state.
Right.
And then she, like, wakes up, spoiler alert. And, whoops.
Oopsie.
I mean, yeah, it's, I don't know. It,
I feel like it maybe
I'm not super before. Intrigued by
I feel like maybe it's kind of, we've seen it before. Okay, the next one I'm kind of excited about. It is a second anthology from Stephanie Perkins, and it's called Summer Days and Summer Nights, 12 Love Stories. And this will include pieces from Libba Bray, Veronica Roth, and Lev Grossman, among others. And Perkins will also be contributing a story to the collection, which will feature tales of young love set in the summertime, and then it's going to be out in 2016. So I'm kind of excited because I need more stuff from Stephanie Perkins. So even a short story will keep me happy. And Libba Bray.
And Libba Bray. Like, Libba Bray released the next book in the Diviners series.
Not yet. It comes out this spring, I think.
Release it. Just
keeps putting, like, come on.
She keeps pushing back the release date. I'm like, I'm never going to get this book. So anything that she writes again, I'll take.
Exactly. So I think, I mean, I really liked the stories that were in My True Love Gave to Me, the holiday themed one that they did. I thought they were really fun and well done. So I'm kind of excited to see what she pulls together for this one. And then this last one is a debut mystery novel from Caleb Roaring. I think that's how you say his last name. And it's called January. And it's a thriller which features an LGBT theme, and was pitched as 13 Reasons Why meets Gone Girl. Hello, that's kind of intense. In the novel, 15-year-old Flynn Doherty is struggling with his sexuality and his relationship. Although Flynn loves his girlfriend January, he also thinks that he might be gay. When January abruptly goes missing, Flynn finds out he wasn't the only one keeping secrets. He begins to see a disturbing picture of a girl in danger. I think that sounds really cool.
I am pro anything Gone Girl related.
And me too. I was like, yes, more crazy people, bring it on. Yeah, so that is also set for publication in the fall of 2016. So I'm really, I don't know, that's the one that really kind of jumped up and grabbed my attention when I read it. So
yeah, same. I'm just like super into the thrillers right now. So anything with that is like, yes, I want to read it.
Yes, exactly. All right. So listeners, if you know of any cool books coming out or books that have been recently optioned to be published, give us a shout. Let us know. We'd like to hear what you guys are reading and thinking about as well. And until next time, I'm Jen.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Mama.
Bye, guys.